Countrywide Podcast, discussions on child and youth care with your host, Wolfgang Vachon.
Hello and welcome to C2Y Podcast, discussions on child and youth care. My name is Wolfgang Vachon. There are a great many ideas, myths, and questions about Asperger's syndrome and the autism spectrum. Trying to understand what autism is, how Asperger's fits into the spectrum, and determining scales of functionality can all be confusing and overwhelming. Living life as an autistic person can also be confusing and overwhelming. Today, I'm going to speak with Nancy Getty, who knows personally the confusion of living as an autistic person, as well as the joys. Nancy is an educator, a mother, and runs the website AspergerRUs.com. Welcome, Nancy Getty.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining me today. I'd like to start with, what is Asperger's syndrome?
It's on the autism spectrum. It's considered a neurological disorder. So basically, our brains are wired differently. When we say spectrum, it's like a big ruler. So no one person fits anywhere on the slot on the ruler. Everyone is completely different. There's similar traits also. So when people show different traits on themselves, with like the hand movements, the no eye contact, things like that, they're all different for everyone, and their functioning levels are different also.
What makes Asperger different than somewhere else on the autism spectrum?
Well, they call it the invisible disorder because we look like everyone else. When you look at us, we don't, you know, appear to be different. But we have a higher functioning level than those that are considered nonverbal. I don't agree with it always, but it's just we're able to express ourselves a little better. So I can talk to you on this podcast because I'm able to express myself, where other people on the spectrum cannot express themselves in the way that society understands.
How do other people on the spectrum express themselves, Nancy?
Well, those that are nonverbal are talking all the time. They talk with their hands, they talk with their body language, they express themselves in what they call the meltdown, which is everything, the oversensitivities to everything around them and coming at them. So they're still expressing themselves just as any typical person would, except to a higher degree. So they call it a meltdown, but a typical person is going to verbalize their feelings, or someone that's nonverbal cannot. So someone with Asperger's syndrome, we're better able to verbalize. It takes us a little longer to verbalize or to say what we want to say, which is called a processing disorder. Takes us longer to express that, and we may not express it in our body language or our facial expressions, but we're able to do it a little bit in a higher functioning area.
When you say you're not able to do it in your body language or facial expressions, what do you mean by that? How are you not able to express in that way?
Well, I'm trying to learn myself to read people's body language better, which is so difficult because we don't see that. And we don't understand what a lot of the body language means. So when people are talking, they use their hands, they use their stance, all of those things to express their emotions and what they're trying to say. We're less likely to do that. We have less arm movement, facial expressions, like I said. All those body language, I mean, 80% of communication is nonverbal.
Do you think it would be similar to if I were to go to a country and there was completely different body movements, like nodding your head means no and waving at someone means go away?
Yes, exactly. We in this country, we rely a lot on verbal expression, but we also look at the body expression. If you went to that different country, you would take the time to learn their communication. It's the same thing here. We need to learn the communication of autistic people.
You started off saying that, you know, you're trying to learn the body language of people who are not autistic, and now you're saying the rest of us have to learn the body language of people who are autistic. How do we, as people who are not autistic, learn that language?
the same way we're learning yours. Take the time to notice. One of my friends who knows me very well can tell when my anxiety starts to rise by my body language. And I always ask her, how did you know? And she just smiles at me. She knows me well enough to read my body language to understand how I'm feeling. And in turn, I'm trying to do the same thing with her. So we're meeting halfway.
And presumably, you know, there's not a simple code, right? So in North America, if we nod our head up and down, most people understand that it means yes. But autistic people, not all the same movements will mean the same things, presumably.
Yes, exactly. And even in the typical world, it's very confusing, the signals, because some people will nod their head saying yes and then say no.
Right. Excellent point. True.
And you look at them like, okay. But you made a point in talking about going to different cultures. For us, it is like being in a different culture.
Every day. There's something called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the DSM, and in May of this year, 2013, the DSM, a new DSM, is coming out, and they're going to be combining what has been identified separately. So traditionally, autism disorder, Asperger's disorder, and pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified, were all part of what the DSM called the autism spectrum disorder, which you call autism spectrum differences. There's going to be a new level system that will determine how much support is needed. So level one, level two, level three on the autism spectrum. What are your thoughts about all these changes that are going to happen with the DSM?
There'll be some good come out of it. They will be definitely some bad, like in anything. They're going to spend a lot of time searching for the answers to the questions that are going to come with these changes. It's going to take them a while to find a balance. They say we're under the autism umbrella. And if we're under the umbrella, then that means everyone else is getting wet.
Yes.
What I feel might happen with these changes is that they're going to start pushing people out into the storm.
Mm.
And that I'm afraid of. I mean, for children, I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid they will lose services that they will need. And a lot of the things with Asperger's syndrome is we can learn. And we can learn to function in the world. But as we get better at it, it doesn't mean we need less services. So as we get better at functioning, we show less traits of autism. People start to think we can now function on our own. We can to a point.
Are you seeing risks with these new changes that support will then be withdrawn because you'll be seen at a level that you won't need support anymore? Is that the concern?
That is a definite fear. I mean, anyone would have that fear when they're relying on something and then suddenly it may be taken away.
Absolutely.
So no matter what it's for, I mean, it's like taking a wheelchair from someone that can't walk.
Right, because they've been in a wheelchair long enough and they should have learned by now or something.
Exactly. It's very difficult. We try. We keep pushing forward. There's a lot of support out there from other people with Asperger's syndrome, and they're all worried also. But we have to, like they say, wait and see.
Right.
We're not very patient, so. I can't wait. I want to know.
That's right.
Because we need concrete evidence. We always need everything concrete. So when you're left, what do they call it, hanging with no concrete evidence, it's very difficult. You're guessing, you're assuming. And like I said to you, I don't like to assume.
Right.
Assuming is guessing.
And guessing is, assuming is challenging for you. What does being concrete give you?
To be safe. When you have rules to follow, those rules are your guideline. And we'd like them to be concrete. Most people treat them as a guideline that they can change the rules to suit their situation or needs. For someone on the spectrum, those rules are concrete. They are set in stone, as I say, and they're very important for keeping us safe. We feel safer in the world when people give us those things to follow. Well, when you start making those changes, we do not do changes very well at all.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like surprises, and we don't do changes. So we have to be prepared for those changes. So something like the changes that are going to be happening with the DSM-5, nothing is set in stone as of yet.
Wow, it must be a very difficult time for you personally and then for everybody who's living with Asperger's or on the spectrum.
I worry for all the children and the adults out there and the families. Mm-hmm. The person on the spectrum themselves is working very, very hard. It's exhausting. But for the families themselves that are trying to advocate and guide their children to be left out there not knowing the answers, that cannot be easy.
You're a parent yourself, and you're a parent with twins, a twin boy, a twin girl, and both of them have been diagnosed as on the spectrum as well. Can you tell me a little bit about parenting children who are on the spectrum?
Well, for me, I already am on the spectrum, so it was quite typical for me.
Right.
I didn't see any differences in my children until other people started mentioning it. And then I realized, I need to work on some things that I struggle with so they won't, like eye contact.
Like eye contact, right.
Eye contact is very, very important in society. It has caused me huge stress over my life because I could not make eye contact. I'm up to fleeting now. Luckily, I had twins, and I was able to always face them towards each other.
Mm.
And at that time, I didn't know they had Asperger's syndrome or that I have Asperger's syndrome. It was just something I knew I struggled with, and I didn't want my children to.
You struggled with what, Nancy?
With eye contact my whole life, but I never knew why.
And you'd never been diagnosed as a child?
No, I was not diagnosed till I was 43.
43?
Yes.
Wow.
But my son was diagnosed before that time. So as I was looking for answers for him, I started having my aha moments. And through all the emotions, anger, why didn't anybody know? Why wasn't I helped? People needed to do these things. All these questions I had. And then it came down to, I have to find a way for my son. And then later on, my daughter was diagnosed.
How did you identify concerns or issues with your son that led to a diagnosis?
People started to notice things and say things. He didn't speak right away, but then again, they were twins, so they had their own twin language.
Right.
And then when they did start to speak, both of them, it was full sentences. There was none of that dada mama stuff. It was basically full sentences. My son, he could talk about the planets. By the time he was 3, he knew all the planets, information about them. By the time he was 7, he was reading encyclopedias, and he could retain information. I just thought he was really smart.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't worried about it, but I started to notice the little details, like he did not get along in his peer groups. He would tend to go towards older people. He could have conversations with elderly men about World War events, and he knew things that he probably shouldn't have known at that age.
Right.
There was many other struggles that I noticed with him. As people started to point those things out, then I became more aware of how my children and myself were different from others.
And so from your son's diagnosis, your daughter was then diagnosed?
She was diagnosed later. She actually asked to be tested. We were suspicious. We just kept thinking that maybe she had her brothers and my traits because she lived with us.
Right.
But we were not surprised when she received the diagnosis.
Right.
It's a lot different for girls. Girls show different levels of autism because as this females, we tend to stand back and look at situations before we step in anyhow, where boys are more aggressively going into things generally. So for girls, they show total different signs a lot of times, and they can keep it hidden. Well, females are very good at adapting.
Right. You managed to adapt till you're 43. How did you receive a diagnosis?
After my son was diagnosed, where my focus was on him, at that time of his diagnosis, they told me they were suspicious that I would receive a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome. But at the time, I wasn't worried about me, so I didn't get tested. And it wasn't till later on, someone that was assisting my son said, maybe I should be tested. And when I was, then I was tested for Asperger's syndrome.
And then you came back as someone having Asperger's syndrome.
Oh, definitely. It didn't surprise me.
Right. You write a poem called Bluntly Aspie. And in that poem, you write, "I am an autistic person, not someone with autism. I did not contract it like a disease or an illness. This is who I am." I really struggled with that because so frequently I use the term someone with autism. Can you explain a little bit more about your dislike of the term someone with autism and your identification as an autistic person?
If you had a cold, you'd be someone with a cold. The right. cold would not be you. I am an autistic person, and I'm okay now in my life with being autistic. And like I say, I didn't get this as a disease. It's not something I got from somebody because they sneezed on me. That's part of who I am. I see and I perceive the entire world differently. My connection to the world is different. My connection to people is different. To my environment is different. That's who I am. I just had to find a way to take who I am and express myself to other people so they could understand me.
And you've really managed to do that in some profound ways. How have you faced your own challenges as someone who's autistic?
5 years ago, I could not have done this podcast. I couldn't even answer my telephone. I let the answer machine take it. If I had to make a call, I would stress for half an hour before I made that call because it's difficult for me to process the information. I didn't understand give and take of conversation like we are doing now.
Uh-huh.
I had to learn all those things. Text messaging taught me that. Just being able to text and then you wait and the other person texts you and then you could process what they said and then you could text them back. So little things like that assisted me. But I cannot stress enough having a good support in your life. Mm. And I have great supports around me now. People that are very caring and patient with me and understanding and most of all, honest. Because that's so important. People are so afraid to say what they mean. Autistic people aren't. We will blurt it out. We really struggle with the filter. I actually have to say filter out loud so I don't say something that possibly could be incorrect in society and not accepted. So my friends have learned to be just bluntly honest with me also. And that's the only way I can learn. It's the only way they will learn too. I mean, we're all teachers and we're all students.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to that idea of learning each other's cultures and how to adapt within the culture of the other person.
Exactly. You know, a lot of that is just having patience, learning patience and the compassion. When I talk to people, I say, altruism is not just a word. It's a lifestyle. I mean, everyone has differences. I've said, what is autism? It's a difference. What is typical? A difference. So what is perfect?
Right. You live in a small community. I often think of a large city such as Toronto, where I live, having many, many resources. You live in quite a small community, which, as you said, works for you because there's not a sensory overload. Do you find there's enough resources and support for yourself in that small community?
Not through the community. There is not. I found it through my friends. Mm. In the community itself, they still need to work on a lot of issues. And they need to talk to more autistic people. And they need to listen more to the parents of autistic people. There's a lot of emotions involved in having a child with autism. For me, it made it easier because I don't express all those emotions. I go to the logical. What is logical? What is scientific? What is needed here? I need the concrete. So when I was searching for things for my children, I looked for what would work.
And what did you find?
For services, I found very few.
Right.
It was very difficult, and we still struggle with it. Like I say, my children are 22, so I'm always looking for the next step for them. Because if something happened to me, they're alone in this world. So I'm always trying to work on those things. But the best thing you can work on for anybody with autism is life skills and social skills. Those are so important. And when I say life skills, I'm talking about doing your laundry, going to pay your bills, keeping appointments, making appointments, doing your banking, things like that. Those are life skills, cooking.
you've had your friends support you in developing those skills?
Oh, definitely. And the biggest hurdle I had to get over for myself and for most autistic people is learning to ask. You spend a lifetime hearing words such as disorder, differences, you're broken, you're damaged, all of these things. You're weird, lazy, and stupid, and the worst one, retarded, mm-hmm. which is still being used. That's being used in our university in the textbooks they use for psychology to teach people. It's still in there.
Yeah.
So we need to remove these things in order to assist people.
And all of these labels were labels that you experienced growing up.
I grew up feeling I had no worth. Mm. That I didn't understand my differences. I didn't know why I was different than everyone else. And I faded into a shadow. I stood back and I watched. That's all I could do. I became the observer. But I'm not an observer anymore.
No, you're certainly not.
Because now I know I have worth. And I'm trying really hard to build a choir so we can all sing louder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to me. I've met many families and many autistic people. I can hear them talking. Even though they're nonverbal, I can hear them.
Right. You don't differentiate between Asperger's and people elsewhere on the spectrum yourself?
No, because of the traits and the functioning level of each person, every one of them is different. Every person I've ever met on the spectrum is different. And it has to do with life experiences, too. For like myself, I have worked very, very hard to get to where I am now. Very hard. And it's been worth it every step, but it's been the most frightening journey I've ever taken.
Mm. I think it's quite difficult for many of us. You have a wonderful, on your website, Asperger RS, there's a clip of a presentation that you do, and you talk about sensations, for example, and what it's like to experience different sensations. I think it's difficult for many of us to really understand what it's like. I hear you talk about being concrete. I hear you talk about standing back and watching. I hear you talk about struggle. Can you give me some specific examples of what are things that are particularly difficult for you and how you experience those things?
The other day I was actually in a restaurant, something I could never do before, but now I can, and I cannot filter all the sounds. So a friend was telling me a story about her aunt who had a hearing aid. And when she went into a restaurant, she'd have to take it up because the sounds were so loud and she couldn't filter them. Do you know what it's like to have the flu and everything hurts? All the sounds are louder. Your hair hurts. That makes me laugh, but
right.
They say even their hair hurts when they have the flu. And it's like that for us. A tag on our shirt may bother us to the point we can't focus. I cannot filter the noises. As you'll see on my website, the smell of cooked cabbage will send me into overdrive. I cannot take that smell, but yeah, the smell of double bubble chewing gum calms me. I don't chew gum, but I love the smell of double bubble, and it calms me. So issues like that, taste, smells, everything, you can escalate all of those sensory issues for us, escalate it way up, some of them 80, 90% from what you may be feeling. So going to Toronto is exhausting for me. I can tell you a story. We were in the train station after I'd done a presentation, and we were waiting for the train. And my friend said, okay, this is the train we're looking for. Look for the numbers on the board, which I struggle with numbers. But as I was sitting there, I couldn't focus because of the people going by and the noises and the smells. If she had not been there, I'd still be sitting in the train station. Because I become disoriented, I could get lost very quickly. When I'm in my car, I don't get lost because the excess noises are gone.
Right.
But I do struggle still. I mean, I haven't had an accident, but I struggle to focus on what I should be doing. And in the city, it's hard not to read all the signs. I'm always reading the signs because I love words. So that whole sensory part of it. So I try to play it like a video game in front of me.
Nice.
And I drive my car. And I find humor everything in life. I have to, in order to function. And if you see one of my presentations, I bring in that humor. My life experiences are funny. You can find the humor in them. Maybe not at the time, but later on.
Yes. You are going to be doing a presentation. Actually, that's how I found out about you, Nancy, is the World Child and Youth Care Conference in St. John's this coming June of 2013. You will be doing a presentation. And certainly there's other presentations that you do which are posted on your website. So I encourage anybody who's interested, and at the very least, to go and check out your video clips, because those are quite great. You are going to be presenting at the World CYC Conference, and I'm wondering, what strategies and understandings would you suggest from people to assist teachers, child and youth workers, and others who work with autistic people?
Well, the first thing is to understand that each of those children is an individual. So you can look at the DSM and use it as a guideline, but you have to look beyond what you're seeing in front of you on paper and see the individual. See what their capabilities are. See what their weaknesses are, what they need to work on. I mean, it's really, really difficult. Someone said once that it's hard to be so capable and yet so incapable at the same time. And that's exactly what it's like. So you have to look at each individual child or adult and help them with their individual needs and guide them. That's not a matter of pushing. It's very important to understand with autistic people, we will not conform. We can learn to adapt.
What are your thoughts about approaches such as applied behavior analysis, which are very much about structure and conforming?
Structure is very good as long as they're, again, seeing beyond what is put on paper for them. So give visual aids. That is so important because many autistic people are visual learners. The hands-on approach is very important. Don't fluctuate those rules. And if you're going to have to make changes, prepare the person for the changes and introduce the social situations. Don't ask somebody with autism, how do you think that other person is feeling? We have no idea. If you watch Big Bang Theory on TV, we don't understand sarcasm and things like that. And Sheldon puts it best when he says, hold up a sign, because we really don't understand. For me, with my friends, they'll say something and I look at them and say, was that sarcasm?
Yeah.
And then they tell me if it's sarcasm because I have no idea.
Right. I've heard several references recently to the Big Bang Theory and young people using it actually with classmates and saying, you know, Sheldon on the Big Bang Theory, that's kind of what I'm like too. And it's really helping young people bridge that gap, that cultural gap you spoke of earlier, because it gives a cultural reference for the rest of us.
Yeah, it really does. Now, I mean, with television, they overdo everything. So with Sheldon, to make his character bigger, they overdo a lot of the things they're trying to express. But from that character, you can take those pieces and help to explain to other people about Asperger's syndrome. I mean, he just makes me laugh. And the thing else, you watch that show and people laugh at the show. It's the same thing for us. I mean, if we have to learn to laugh at ourselves, anyone has to learn that. Because I've learned to do it. I'm different. I don't always fit into situations. Sometimes I have to slide back. I still can't keep a conversation with more than one person. So the focus still has to be there. So there's many things that he struggles with that you will see people on the spectrum struggle with. But he is a character, and we have to remember that.
Absolutely. You have two adult children at this point in time. They were diagnosed relatively, you know, early, 7 for your son.
He was 8, my daughter was 19.
Okay. What are the transitions like for, what were the transitions like for your children, going from childhood to adolescent and now into adulthood?
They've all been, you expect people to meet certain milestones, and that's what society expects. But when you already have a difference yourself, you can see your children differently. For their milestones, it was when they were ready. I would guide them. I never pushed them. I would guide them. So when people say your kids aren't talking yet, why? They're not ready. They're not walking yet. Why? They're not ready. When they were ready, they did it. And each time they did it, they would just get up and do it. So they would see other children riding their bikes and they wouldn't attempt it. And then one day they got on a bike and rode it. They had studied the other children. But the transitioning going from public school system, which was very difficult for both of them, I ended up homeschooling my son for quite a while, and then into the high school system, where there were few supports again, it made it very difficult. And as they've gone into adulthood, each stage, we keep the communication open between us. I used to do something when they were younger, that if something went wrong, we had an egg timer, 1 minute egg timer, and we would sit down and have family court. Each person got 1 minute to state their case. And then I was judge and jury. So if one person was mistaken in what they did, the other person got to decide their fate. So it was make their bed for a week or whatever, knowing that next time it could be them. So we kept it open in communication and found ways that worked for us. And the difficulty is the social part out there. Like I told you, my son usually is in his lair working on his computer, but his art talents are absolutely amazing. Mm. And he has a whole social network through the computer. He talks to people worldwide, and it works for him. My daughter, she's different. She's been able to function better outside of the home.
So would you say your son uses the internet as his dimension, his location for many of his relationships?
Oh, definitely. Hmm. I mean, there's so much technology out there that can assist somebody on the spectrum. Even Google Earth. If I'm going to do a presentation where normally I would have huge anxiety going to that place, I now can Google Earth, take the little man and walk it right down the street. And you can usually take virtual tours of the building.
Right.
So it cuts back my anxiety. There's things like with the sensory issues, again, you don't get to hear all those noises on Google Earth. So I have headphones that I will wear with my music. I have a squash ball that I hold in my hand to help with the sensory issues. We went to the airport, and I got randomly picked for a pat-down. And immediately, my world froze. It just froze. But it was great because it ended up being a good experience because my friend, who is my support person, she took care of everything around me, and I was better able to explain to people later what the anxiety felt like, what I was experiencing. And I never could have done that before without that support with me. Mm. But like I explained it to people, it's, again, Big Bang. I felt like I was Leonard sitting in the time machine and everything else around me was moving very quickly. And all I could see was the blue gloves that were going to touch me, what I was afraid of. But I made it through.
Yeah.
We got on the plane.
Nice. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about that we haven't already covered today, Nancy?
I think we need to be more understanding of the families of individuals that are autistic. We forget that they're also pushed out of society, that they're forgotten. These are parents that had all these hopes and dreams for their children, and all of a sudden it's not that those hopes and dreams have disappeared, they've changed. And there's so many things in society where we're judged. These parents of these children are being judged all the time. And the stress that it puts on the family unit, the entire family unit, is unbelievable. We need to help the family unit. We need to look at it as a unit and help all of them and understand and be patient.
So is there anything in particular that people who work with families should keep in mind regarding that?
We forget these children are a gift. Mm. They see the world differently. I mean, we can grow together. We can all grow together instead of looking at the child and all they're hearing is all these negatives. They're going to all these different doctors and therapists that are trying to help them. There's many passionate people out there that are doing what they do out of passion. These people are trying to help these families. We need to look at the whole unit and not forget that this child is a gift. This child can show you a different way of being. Like when I say to people, I say, what's it like to have autism? And I say, it's real. That's who we are. We are real to who we are. And we're trying to find a balance to fit with everyone else.
Well said. I appreciate your realness. I appreciate your candor. I really, really appreciate your willingness to share with us and to educate all of us who don't live on the spectrum, and helping us understand a bit more about the culture that you do live within. So thank you very, very much for joining all of us today, Nancy. And there's lots of stuff that you've given us to think about. I really encourage everyone to visit your website, Asperger R Us. And if you're in St. John's for the World CYC Conference, definitely check out Nancy's presentation. And have a wonderful, wonderful winter. And I look forward to seeing you in the summer.
Thank you.
All right. Goodbye.